I'm Peter Bonner McNiss, and he is Chris Lang. And welcome to another of these regular property briefings. And a warm welcome to you, Chris.
And thanks again. It's good to be here.
You know, I've often heard people say that the key factor in real estate is location, location, location. Is that actually true?
Look, you're absolutely right. Everyone wants to focus on location, location, location. It seems to be an accepted truism. But, and of course, even if you get a great, good street, you probably would prefer a corner location. But location by itself is not the only thing you need to take into account. You see, some people always want to get the best property, or we'll call it a great property, as opposed to looking a little bit deeper into things and seeking out what I call good property as opposed to purely great property.
Well, what actually do you mean by that?
Okay, let's explore this a little deeper, this idea. And to fully appreciate what you should be looking for from a property in order to help ensure your ultimate success. You see, what I'm trying to impress upon you is the importance of buying good property at really great value as opposed to buying what you consider to be a great property, but it might be only showing you average or maybe good value as a purchase opportunity. And you've really got to understand how to balance out these two possibilities.
So what are you actually saying?
Well, you see, unfortunately, some people tend to get fixated on identifying the perfect property. And that may be determined by how it looks, perhaps its age, sometimes what even their friends and family might think about it if they were to drive past it. I mean, it's where it's located and a whole host of other reasons to justify how great the property might be. Whereas the approach I like to take is to try and uncover a good property, which is well let to solid tenants, it's correctly priced, and therefore it can provide you with a predictable return going forward. So it's not so important the visual aspect of immediate appreciation of the property, but it's having an intrinsic, ongoing, endurable value. I mean, look, on the residential side of things, some people get fixated on a Victorian home, and there's no question it has immediate appeal, but sometimes internally it's difficult to renovate that because they're all bigger rooms, the ceilings are extraordinarily high, so you've got heating issues, whereas sometimes it's better to buy a property that has a good layout or an easily adaptable layout. It may not be the most visually appealing to start with, but with some clever adaptions and renovations, you can make it into that so that someone coming back after you bought it and renovated it says, gee, I didn't know you could do this. This is amazing. Whereas it's more the inexperienced person looking at the face value of an attractive Victorian home will be drawn to it, whereas you can get real value and you can add real value by getting something that not everyone understands the hidden underlying value in the property that you can, with some clever steps that you take, and I'm talking now commercially as well, simple adaptions and the way to add value, that you can end up with something that's really worthwhile and will outpace something else that initially was considered a great property, but for whatever reason, when the tenant leaves, the property may have looked great, but it wasn't a good and easily subdivisible property going forward.
Are you able to give us some examples of the marketplace?
Well, coming back to the commercial market, I mean, recently there's been a lot of buying activity, both local and from overseas investors. for office buildings within the various CBDs around Australia. Now, most of these purchases have been made by institutions and professional fund managers, all of whom have been competing for the same markets or within the same markets. And that has had a profound effect on prices. And it's almost as though all this money flooding into the market is simply looking for a home. And actually, they seem to be paying scant regard for the fundamentals of commercial property investing. And just by way of example, in Sydney and Melbourne markets, you would have seen investors scrambling for A-class buildings that may not have even been fully leased. Now, typically, this sort of building will comprise an area of, say, 50,000 square metres, and on the price paid, it's generating a sort of 4.5, 5, if you're lucky, 6% yield, but it's more likely to 4.5 to 5.5%. And that's has reflected a purchase price of around sort of $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, $13,000 per square metre of lettable area. Now, as a result of the competition from overseas investors, local investors have had to fiercely compete with each other, and in many cases have been forced into paying a higher price within a lower price bracket simply to be able to place their funds. Whereas if you choose to move out into an established suburban precinct, as to instead of simply following the herd and wanting to buy those A-class buildings, you would have most likely been able to obtain a top quality building, suburban building, which was fully leased, and it may only be 10,000 square metres in size, but it would generate a yield of around 6.5 to 7%. This is over the last 12 months. And that would have reflected a purchase price of $4,000 to $5,000 a square metre, as opposed to $10,000 to $12,000 a square metre. Now, as you can appreciate, this provides far better value, even though the quality of the property may be considered as good rather than great.
However, it's probably fair to say that not all of our listeners are able to participate at that level. So how does this apply to them?
Yeah, well, look, I realise our listeners may not personally be either in either of these price brackets at the moment, but when you're considering commercial property, you do need to understand that of what's going on behind the scenes, even though they might only be purchasing a single strata title office suite. So maybe we should delve a little deeper into the logic behind that's being adopted by these investment fund managers, these larger ticket institutions. I mean, first of all, they have large amounts of money they need to place at any one time. And this has sort of been fueled by the huge amounts coming through the super funds and so forth. Furthermore, they also need to feel, or they do feel more comfortable following that herd mentality and competing with other major investors for CBD office buildings. You see, their conservative approach is that if the market were to falter, they can always claim to have been purchasing only prime property. And their thinking is that to purchase anything located in a less prominent location would effectively cause them to fail in isolation. I mean, it's okay to fail as a group because you all justify, well, we had to, everyone else was doing that. But if you sort of step out and go for value all by yourself and it doesn't work, well, they feel there's an unnecessary exposure. So as a result, all the activity within the CBDs, this has caused a ripple effect out into the suburbs where prices have been starting to creep up and make it difficult for smaller investors like our listeners to purchase property at what you would call a great price. So it's important to understand that the sale prices achieved by nearby properties, you might be able to justify those higher prices. The problem is that valuers then discount these prices achieved when gathering sales evidence because they believe them to be artificially inflated for the purpose of a mortgage valuation. So what I'm saying is that vendors might be asking prices that sales have been achieved, but because of this ripple effect, I'm finding the valuers are simply saying, look, I know there's around the corner something sold for a similar price, but I don't think I can justify it. And they're actually pulling back their valuations. And that's more importantly why I always say to my clients that you need to know in advance what a valuer will support with regard to the property. So sometimes what it means is that you've got to hunt a little harder. And I always try and buy properties off market. Once they get to the market, you've got to compete with everybody else. What I like to try and do is identify properties that the new lease may well have just been agreed. It hasn't yet been signed, and therefore the selling agents aren't able to go to the market just yet. And at the moment, from reaching agreement to actually executing and exchanging the formally signed lease document, that can be anywhere from 2 to 5 weeks. So it's during that period, there's a window of opportunity, I find, for my clients to negotiate and reach a deal, even though the lease hasn't been signed. You can always do it subject to the lease being executed in the terms of the heads of agreement between the landlord and the tenant. And as far as selling agents are concerned, yeah, they'd love to have a marketing campaign, be it an auction or an expression of interest or whatever they want to do. But the reality is they simply want to sell the property, bank the money and move on to the next deal. And it's not that they're doing their client a disservice. In actual fact, if they can do that, it saves their client all the marketing costs of going to a formal campaign. But it means that while we can't dilly-dally in during the negotiations, you don't have to move forward with unseemly haste because you have this window of opportunity that you know what the deal is, but the agent can't formally go to the market until the documents are signed. And so that's why I tend to try and uncover these properties, which I said may not be in the strict terms, the best properties, but the deals are structured and the opportunities to add value are there so that, in my view, they're a good property offering you great value.
That's interesting. But is there some light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, yes. The good news is that with the tightening of lending guidelines and the Royal Commission, the last few months has seen a slowdown in buyer activity in Australia to where you would say that the office market is heading back into balance, and therefore you should be able to achieve a far better value for your investment dollar as we move further into this year.
Well, that's good to hear. And it's also been helpful to understand the thought process behind the decision made by larger investors. So thanks for that.
Well, it was my pleasure.